So today the topic was chosen by Liam, and so take it away. What have you got for us today?
Indeed. You know, I think most of my motivations is to support my own ends and justify my existence. And one of the things that I have in many years ago now, was get married. And so I thought I'd better defend my defunct choice of monogamy once and for all, so that I can live in peace of it and stop all this debaucherous polygamy talk nonsense. So today's argument will be that monogamy is good.
Okay. So I'm glad that we've come to a firm position on that. So why is monogamy good?
Okay, so I did some research, in fact, on this, as everyone should when trying to defend a position. It's not always a great idea to decide on your position and then start researching, but nevertheless, that's where we find ourselves a lot. I went to our good friend Google Research, and I found a bunch of scientific papers trying to explain why monogamy, from evolutionary perspectives, from biological perspectives, from social perspectives. There was one very interesting article on medieval monogamy, which was somewhat cynical. It's, you know, it was basically the, yes, we've always, in short, both churchmen and laymen practiced polygamous marriage, mating at the same time they approved of monogamous marriage, which, you know, seems to maybe encapsulate what's been happening the last several hundred years. I ended up turning to a dastardly source. I was getting a bit lost there, because all I could find was, like, you know, biological reasons why we see monogamy, not maybe arguments for monogamy. I ended up accidentally at Huffington Post, which I can't recommend. And there was a decent list, you know, from them about why monogamous relationships are good. I don't think any of these will help me in any time. I only bring it up because one of the arguments they put up is that monogamy is good because it means there are less people trying to cheat.
Wait, hang on.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. I'm just going to make a note of that. I don't want to interrupt your patter any further.
No, keep going. Yeah. I don't want to try and defend that in any way, because I don't think Huffington Post is defendable. But I just wanted to bring it up as this is part of maybe what's in the literature at the moment. So I've come up with some basic ideas off my own head, not relying on scientific evidence or on current pop culture buffoonery, but on some logical and reasonable and rational ideas that I have around.
All right, perfect reason in support of an argument. This is where we should go. Let's do it.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so the first one, I'm going to go down a tricky road, and I'm going to make a biological case for monogamy.
All right.
So here we go. There are two different sexes in the human species, and I'm already in trouble because, you know, maybe there isn't, maybe there's 10. Okay, so
yeah, I'm not sure if the science supports you on that, but let's just go with that for now.
Let me rephrase, because obviously I've said it wrong, and just say that biologically speaking, it takes two people. Oh man, already I'm feeling really awkward about this argument. It takes two people to make a baby, and I'm going to trail off now because I'm already in trouble, I think.
Wait, can I just sort of pop in here, and I might be able to help scaffold your argument just a tad.
Okay.
It sounds like you're trying to say that in order to reproduce,
yeah,
it requires both a contribution of male and female gametes, which, yes, most of the time lines up to male and female persons.
Ah, that's exactly what I was trying to say. Thank you for understanding. And so in that scenario, if we want to create a tiny human monster, we require, you know, two people of different, distinctly different sexes to do so. And so it makes sense to then get married forever.
All right, so in a broadly generalized manner,
yeah,
having a monogamous pair of male and female is biologically useful.
Yeah, I mean, we can, you know, with a male and a female, I suppose we can, if you're looking at it from purely reproductive perspective, you can make a new baby roughly every 9 months or so, and that is good for the progression of the human species. If I might lean on my very fine information from the HuffPost as well, apparently, according to them, sex can improve with time. This is their first point. Putting that together with the biological needs of having two different sexes to make a baby, I feel like staying with the same partner over a long period of time is advantageous.
Right. So just to be clear, it's advantageous because of the reproduction and the improvement in the quality of sexual relations.
Correct.
Okay.
Also from Huffington Post, apparently there are peace of mind about STDs, but that's a different argument.
All right. Wasn't the Huffington Post left wing at some point?
Oh, look, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
I mean, like, I'm not saying that this is necessarily a bad argument yet, but that's sort of the sort of argument that you'd expect from someone who has a siege mentality. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, look, I can hear you saying, yes, but what does making babies have to do with a monogamous relationship? Surely people get married for other reasons as well.
Well, I mean, I was going to wait and hear the totality of the argument before questioning it. So, yeah, okay. But that was in my mind.
Okay. I mean, I think, you know, and this is the thing, right, is that it's not, this isn't an airtight argument. There's still a leap from making babies to a monogamous relationship. But I think it's part of the equation. There's certainly good reasons that make sense in this particular scenario that align with monogamous relationships. I don't think they're contradictory.
I'm still not quite seeing what the link is between monogamy and reproduction, though.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so if we go down our current social road and say that, you know, it's advantageous to have two people looking after a child as they grow up, I think that's where having kids and being in a monogamous relationship is aligns, right? We can show what a good relationship looks like to the child growing up. We can model good behavior and loving behavior. We can also model, you know, that kind of interpersonal relationship with two people that this kid intimately trusts.
That makes sense. Although this does sound like an argument against single parents rather than for monogamous parents, though.
Yeah.
I mean, two adults taking care of one child will certainly, you know, having a child who is loved and cared for by more than one person is definitely going to be that child's advantage.
Yeah.
But one could make the argument that those two adults don't need to be in a relationship to do that.
I mean, that's true. They don't. And you could just have two random people, two friends or two co-workers who looked after the child. This is why I'm including this idea of kind of modeling this loving, caring relationship. It's like being able to preview kind of and show intimacy as the child grows up, I think. So I think an intimate relationship is important. I actually don't think necessarily we need you need two biologically different people to make the baby, but I don't think you need two biologically different people to raise the baby. I do think that a monogamous relationship can be any two people, and as long as we have those two people then that seems to align. I agree that, yes, there's not a one-to-one correlation between child rearing and monogamy, but I think they align. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that makes sense. So can I go back to the start for a moment and ask for your definition here of monogamy? What's involved in this process?
Yeah, okay. So a monogamous relationship is where two people who are in a intimate and loving relationship don't have sexual relations with other people.
So the crucial part about monogamy is not having sex with other people outside that relationship.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think what we can do, though, is broaden out sex beyond purely the penetrative act, for example. I think when we say sex, what I mean is that kind of particular intimate relationship that includes physicality and sharing of things. It's difficult to define at this point, but I think, yeah, I'm not just talking about the physical act, but about, like, you know, the emotional and intimacy between two people.
All right. So we've got a couple of different things going on here. One is a physical intimacy. Another is an emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Are there any other components to monogamy in your
mind?
Just to nail that down even further, this is the closest intimacy that we have with another person.
Agreed. Yes. You know, we could add in other things. I don't know whether they're necessary. We could talk about financial or social intimacy, but I don't know whether that's inherently necessary for the definition of monogamy.
Well, what is it for you? Do you think that they're important?
I think they're important. I don't think they're essential.
Okay.
I don't know.
So maybe the social, maybe the social intimacy. A sufficient one.
Yeah, maybe social intimacy might also be included. This idea that you know, that there's an outward appearance as well as an inward appearance of like, it's not secret. I don't think a monogamous relationship is secret. I think it's social. I think it's social.
So there's a declarative aspect to monogamy then. The world will know that these two people are for each other.
Yes. Yeah, I reckon. Yeah. Yeah.
And that might be one of the purposes of weddings then?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like a big, like, this is happening. So you guys all now know that I'm with, you know, this other person.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like, that was broadly the point of my wedding. It was to be like, this is now my property. And
oh man, I was in trouble at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, no. No. But I gave away my personal property to this other person.
Yeah.
So now we're in a limbo where we're not sure who owns what.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So there are different aspects there. All right. So why is monogamy superior to polygamy, to polyamory, or to bigamy? Maybe we should clarify. Do you mean so monogamy as in to love another person, not necessarily in the sense of marrying someone? So
yeah, no, I guess no. Marriage isn't an essential part of monogamy. You can be committed without jewelry being involved, I think. But what do you mean by polyamory, or what was your other one?
Bigamy. But that you've already sort of cut that one off, because it's like, okay, this is not about marriage so much as about being intimate with one person. So you are having this position that having an intimate relationship with one person is superior to having intimate relationships with more than one person.
Yeah.
All right. So why?
Okay. Okay. So I think off the bat, I'm going to strike my initial arguments about babies, because I see the flaw there clearly, that that's going to tie me to a particular thing that I don't want to be tied to, because the other argument initially that I had written down was tradition. that it, you know, it has been traditional that we have monogamous relationships, socially speaking. So it's socially acceptable, I suppose, is one. I don't know how far that stands up, but what do you think about this idea that it's socially acceptable?
I mean, I think that your point before about that declarative aspect is where we really get into it, right? Mm. Because if you're in a monogamous relationship, then everyone knows it. But if you're not in a monogamous relationship, well, it might be currently less socially acceptable, but I still don't see how that's anyone's business. If you have, if you're in a throuple and you have three or more people who all love each other,
yeah,
it becomes more complicated to explain, but I don't see how that's inferior at this moment.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it's not, my argument isn't necessarily that polyamory is bad, just that monogamy is better, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I'm all for hearing that, but I'm still okay. Not clear on why it's superior.
Okay, so one thing that I've gotten written down here is, and it's quite a pragmatic thing, it's just convenience.
Yeah.
I find that being in a committed relationship with one other person, for the most part, it's very convenient. We share our life together. We share finances. We share roles of looking after our child and our house and our dogs, not in that order. And you know, we share the load of living kind of thing. And I think that's a convenient way of being. Yeah.
All right. Now, okay. So I want to push back on this just a little bit. Yeah. And say that your argument there supports polyamory more than it does
Jacques.
Okay, because I can, if I say, hey, I want a third person to come and live and be intimate with me, then they're going to be sharing the roles and duties and responsibilities of this household too. Mm. But now we're even going to have even less burden and even more benefits.
Mm.
So it's definitely conveniently structured in a social way to be monogamous, but I still see that sharing as diluting the difficulty rather than enhancing it.
Well, look, I thank you very much for your opinion. I would like to point out that you have walked directly into my philosopher's trap.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, indeed. Because of course, yes. You are correct in saying that, yes, look, if two people together is convenient, then perhaps three or more, perhaps 10 or 12 would be sharing all sorts of loads and being, you know, much more productive and all that. Yes, I can agree. And yet what we have is quite an interesting phenomenon, I think, in that intimate relationships give us diversity in a lot of things. They give us diversity of opinion, experience from different people, diversity in, you know, income and abilities, strengths and weaknesses and all that. But when we have two, we are not overloaded by choice. I think when we add more than two people into this sort of scenario, we become overloaded. Let me ask you a question that will lead to a thought experiment here. And that, have you ever, of an afternoon, turned to your partner and said, hey, partner, what would you like for dinner? And they've said, I don't know, what would you like for dinner? And you've gone back and forth and been unable for maybe 45 minutes to decide what to have for dinner.
Well, that only ever applies to me, to us, when we don't know what we want. Because when we do know what we want, then we have a... Well, we'll call it a battle. You know, the raging storm goes on to see who gets their pick of tacos or burritos. But at some point, one person will win supremacy, and that's our problem-solving method.
And absolutely, this is how many people do. But imagine if instead of a two-part, like two-sided war, we have a three or four or five-sided war. This could go on forever. We have, you know, mini sieges, we have mini battles, we have, you know, like it becomes more complicated the more people we add. And so I feel like the duo of the monogamous relationship, I argue, brings in enough diversity and difference without overloading. And I think any more than two, I am suggesting, makes for a far more complicated existence, and doesn't, there's no gain back of having that extra third person to bring in the clothes every now and again.
All right. So when we get to this argument down to its core, it's that the simplicity of a duopoly is good. The simplicity reigns supreme here.
Yeah.
Okay. I have some thoughts on that, but I want to hear all the arguments before I render a verdict. Are there any other aspects of monogamy that make it superior to polyamory or polygamy?
Well, let's see. Okay, I do want to make one further argument, and it might be a bit of a stretch, but I think it applies. In that, I think what instead of making a positive case for monogamy, I would like to pivot somewhat and attack polygamy a little bit and suggest that polygamy is one of those things that is for the privileged few, the upper echelon, the ones who have the resources, the time, and the various skincare products to not only afford and attract, but also maintain polyamorous lifestyles. I think it's unrealistic to suppose that we can court multiple people and then also live with multiple and do all these things. I think it's one of those upper class hedonistic things that actually requires a lot of resources to be able to maintain.
All right. What makes it harder to be poly by being poor?
Okay. So
I mean, like, sorry. So like yeah. I'm gonna go real lowbrow here for a moment and suggest that let's suppose we've got like a whole bunch of university students in a dorm.
Yeah.
And it's a boy girl dorm. Yeah. And there's just a whole lot of love going on and no declared relationships as singular.
Yeah.
They're all going to be eating ramen for breakfast and leftover pizza. So I don't see how that's a bourgeois thing to do.
I think it's one of those tricky things. It's the implied privilege, not necessarily the direct privilege. But I mean, let's consider birthdays for a second, and let's say that everybody has a birthday, and being in, I would imagine being in a polyamorous relationship is that there is a physical and emotional attachment or connection with more than one person. And so it's not that there's no attachment to these people. It's just that there is an attachment to many people. And so you've got more than, two birthdays in the year that you have to account for. There's a lot more birthdays. And so there's a lot more presents to buy. There's a lot more cakes to make. And this is just one example. You know, what about of the evenings where you go out or go for a date or something like that? There is just more frequency of these occurrences happening, and so more finances are required.
All right, so I want to just push back on that for a moment. Are you suggesting that you only ever get birthday cakes for your wife and not for anyone else?
I suggest that there are very few people that I make cakes for their birthday, and my wife is one of them.
But there are others?
Well, I suppose sometimes my mother or father, my daughter, I suppose, but that would be about it, yeah.
Do you go out with friends and do things with them?
Yeah, but I don't buy them cake.
I mean, like, this feels like a moral failing on your part rather than...
Go on.
I mean, we get together and play D&D, and where's my cake? I mean,
I bring chips, that's the level of our relationship. Where are chips?
I know where I am on the pecking order now.
I guess we never had the conversation here. Yeah. But yeah, where
it's not a declared relationship deserving of cake.
Yeah, you're not at the I'm going to handcraft you gluten-free cake. Yes,
I'm gonna have to go and cry just a little bit.
Yeah, you're gonna have to wind me and dine me a little more. I need some I need some commitment.
Okay, so at the core of this, it's there is a greater level of effort going into your partner than others, and you expect a much greater level of engagement with them, including dating as one.
And I think there's a financial aspect to that, and there's also an emotional aspect to that. You know, I don't know whether I could intimately love and give affection and attention to more than kind of one other person on that level.
Now, I think that's an interesting point. So when you told me about this topic, I didn't put any thoughts together against monogamy, not at all. But I did put some thoughts together in favor of polyamory.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And what do you got?
Huh?
What do you got?
All right. So this exact point was one that I thought about at length, right?
Okay.
It would be difficult for us to become, to do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that says to me, two different things. The first is that we currently don't hold the emotional skill set necessary to maintain a multifaceted relationship, right? Which is not the same thing as saying we can't develop it or shouldn't develop it, just that it's currently underdeveloped.
Yeah.
The second thing is that, I mean, you and I are both in our mid-30s. And so we've been socialized and we've been dating and we've been married. So we've been in this particular social space for quite some time. But if you're 18 years old and you've never dated someone before, then you don't have all those preconceptions. I mean, like, you've definitely been raised in a culture of monogamy being the way. But if you're right there, right at the start of your relationship, then polyamory is going to be just fine for you because you don't have any other practices to compare it with.
Okay. So
it's large, like polygamy is only really a problem for older people to develop. Not that it can't be, just that it's harder.
So you're suggesting this is a socialization thing, that we could be socialized into being intimate with more than one person.
Yeah. I mean, if you started with the idea that, I mean, like, so I'm going to go right to the potential foundation of monogamy. And part of it is based in ownership of women, right? So, and I'm not saying that this is right. I'm saying, like, well, once upon a time, you were a man and it's like 1842 and, you know, you've got to ensure your bloodline so that you can have Walter Harrison Jr. the 13th because you're Walter Harrison Jr. the 12th. Yeah. And so you need to have a brood sow to reproduce for you. And so you'd buy that off another man.
Okay.
All right. So monogamy was born because this is the official... this woman is the one who officially creates your heirs, which is why we also have bastards, you know, because, well, if you cheat, then this is not officially part of your bloodline and is not part of your earning structure. And so monogamy is all really part of a bourgeois, masculinist, patriarchal framework.
Yeah. Okay. Can I bite back on that one for a sec, or do you have more to go?
No. Well, I mean, like, I could rant, but I want to hear your biting.
Okay. You know what? You're right. Absolutely. In that there was a time in which the monogamous relationship was indeed a patriarchal power to turn women into property, basically.
Yeah.
I would like to also remind you of a particular point in history, possibly several points in history, where this was occurring in a polyamorous way as well, where large, powerful men would have broods of, collections of various property objects called women in things called harems, where they would, you know, have a bunch of women on girls and they would sleep with them and, you know, spread their seed as far as possible, suggesting that, you know, they weren't necessarily, they might choose an heir out of that brood, or they might have an official quote unquote partner that would give them the next lineage, but they would have no trouble. In fact, would want to have that diverse spreading. My argument here being that the toxic masculine patriarchy is not like reserved solely for monogamy, but in fact invades most of history. That includes polyamorous and polygamy style relationships.
No, okay, no, that's fair. Okay, so I can't blame monogamy on toxic masculinity. But when we get to a point in relatively modern history, we've still got this idea that the role of women is to be there for men. And this would have been our parents' generation, so the boomers, where a man can sleep around, but a woman can't, because a woman then loses her value in a couple of different ways. And if we embraced polyamory or polygamy, then we'd have to throw out that idea and engage with the idea that sex and relationships is not for any one person, and that we don't own anyone else, and that we don't have rights to anyone else permanently.
I agree, absolutely. I don't think this is necessarily anything against monogamy, because I think in contemporary monogamous relationships, we also have to throw out that ideology of women as property and men as in power. And I think no matter what relationship we hold to, that toxic masculinity can and is a problem and needs to be addressed. I don't see how being able to sleep with multiple people, either for men or women, helps. I don't see how it hurts, but I don't see how it helps the case for equality.
All right, but okay, fair enough. But I do have a case for sleeping around anyway.
All right, sure.
All right, so in polyamory, okay, here's my big thing for polyamory. And it's sort of against monogamy now that I think about it, but okay. So you said right at the start, there are a lot of things that we want from a partner, okay? We want romantic love. We want sexual compatibility. We want economic support. We want friendship and encouragement.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's a large burden to place on a single person. Now, when we get it right, it can work really, really well. But still, that's a lot to expect to someone when it's quite possible that this person that you're attached to might not fit every single rubric. Humans are messy. We contain multitudes. And sometimes the parts don't all line up in a metaphorical sense. But, you know... okay, hang on. Let me get my thoughts there. All right, so polyamory overcomes this problem because now we're not placing the entire burden of the relationship on a single person. You might have three people in a relationship where one of them might be asexual, and so they don't have the burden of the sexual needs of the other two placed upon them, and instead, so two people in that relationship might have a stronger sexual connection, whereas the asexual person might have a much greater friendship with one of them, and the other person might be providing the economic support. So now there's a diffusion of the burden of the relationship.
Okay, you know, this might not apply, but the image that I got in my head was of the Brady Bunch's housemaid. Alice is the asexual third parent in that household, and that makes me so uncomfortable.
That's just wrong, because she is smoldering.
I know. She was fire, man. But definitely, she was wholesome in a way that the parents, even the Brady Bunch parents, had their moments of, you know, leaning over and go, yeah, well, you know, there's a double bed upstairs or something like that. Whereas Alice was pure and asexual, but also that parental figure. I feel like if we go down that road of separating out different roles for people, and, you know, let's say I'm in a relationship with three other people, and one person we bond over video games and oral sex, and the other one we cook and we make out, and the third one we just make babies, and then, you know, and, you know, one of those might be, you know, it's in, I'm not suggesting that it's me and three other women. It's, you know, maybe two dudes and two, and maybe the video games and oral sex is on weekends, and you know, we cook and you know, it just seems like we're putting up all of these boundaries. It actually seems more compartmentalized, and dare I say it, more restrictive than in a monogamous relationship. Because I feel like anytime we set up any of those boundaries, crossing boundaries becomes the problem. So are we just making more problems?
I mean, we might be making it more complicated, but I'm not sure that's the same thing as more problems, because I mean, the image I got in my head was two couples. So you've got, you've got your primary and your secondary and your tertiary. So supposing it's two heterosexual couples, and you know your primary is the wife, your wife, and the I'm speaking from my own perspective here, not that anything needs to be in a certain way, but you know, you've got the wife, and so your secondary is the other woman, and your tertiary is the other dude, and so you're not necessarily going to need to be sexually compatible with the dude if you're a heterosexual male. And you're not necessarily going to need to live in the same house, but you know, you maybe you're neighbors, and so Saturday night is party night, but still you share the burden of raising all your children together, like a family. And so it's like a big family unit, except it's sexier, I guess.
That is possibly the greatest line to sell polygamy. It's like a big family unit, but sexier. My next concern is one of balance, I suppose. What if we have a polyamorous situation with four people, and it just so happens that one of them turns out to be the other three's tertiary person, like that they are on the bottom rung in all three interactions? That seems like a really rough and purgatory style role to play in this group of relationships.
That sounds like a really legitimate concern, and one that would need to be negotiated just like any other relationship, because if you're the low man on the totem pole and you're not getting your needs met, then that's not fair. And you know, then that foursome becomes a throuple instead, you know, because
This is not the larger issue. The larger issue is not necessarily the one person that's tertiary to all three. It's the fact that even in this polyamorous relationship, there is a hierarchy. And so why not just be with the person that is highest up on your hierarchy?
Because maybe you have, I'm trying not to get filthy on this, but I'm just imagining that like there is a sexual compatibility between multiple people at the same time, and there's just a certain amount that you guys can do with extra people.
Okay
like Twister, but without pants.
I imagine that you would have to have a sexual relationship or sexual intimacy, or at least a sexual connection, as well as an emotional and intimate connection with every other person in that polyamorous relationship. So isn't this again just far more complicated? Like, it's hard enough finding one person that I'm compatible with, because I'm not for everybody. And so finding one person was a challenge. If I have to find a group of people that are all in favor of Liam, it's like getting that weird bit of Lego that somehow doesn't connect to any other bit of Lego. I feel like I'm making my life harder by doing this.
All right. So I want to concede this point, but I want to put it to you this way.
Yeah.
Every objection that you've brought up here has the same theme, that polyamory is more difficult.
Yeah.
Especially with our current skill set, which goes back to my original defense, which was that we may not necessarily have the skills and the emotional flexibility yet, but this can be developed. And the greater complexity, I mean, the argument here would be like, if you are a person who does not contain these skills, then polyamory is going to cause you problems. Yeah. But that doesn't seem like a reason against polyamory. That just seems like a reason against not biting off more than you could chew.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're suggesting is that I and many of us find monogamy superior because we have been socialized to choose that over a polyamorous situation, and also been given the tools for monogamy and not the tools for polygamy.
Yes, exactly. Because look, if I can have a small digression here, okay, I've been watching Halo recently, and you've got like these Spartan super soldiers, they all wear the armor and they're all socialized together. And I'm certain that they're polyamorous because they're all like real tight knit and really intimate with each other. We get to see them naked together many times. Okay, so it's like they were socialized in this manner and it works for them, and they can also fight aliens together. And this is what I want from my polyamorous relationships.
I love that we've gotten to the point where we're using the TV series based on a video game, Halo, as an argument in favor of polyamorous relationships. All right,
we could go with Friends from the 90s.
Are you suggesting that Friends from the 90s is a polyamorous relationship?
Definitely. There is a six-way, a sextuple.
That is hot. Imagine doing that series and then in like season four, they all fall in love together.
Yeah.
I would watch that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, so you've got like your declared relationships, your primaries, and you've got Ross right at the bottom. He's the...
No, but okay. No, actually, if we look at this in more detail, arguably speaking, from the 90s perspective, Jennifer Aniston was what sex is, basically.
Yes.
And she was in love with Ross, who is unarguably the bottom of that totem pole.
Yes.
And so there is a balance there. We've got the top and the bottom there. And then you've got, you know, let's say Monica and Chandler, although I'd put Chandler higher because I think Chandler is hot. And then, yep, you know, the two oddballs being Joey and Phoebe, but only they're in the middle only because they will actually make out with anybody that happens to be in front of them at the time.
And they clearly don't have like, and this is just like real life. They are not going to have the same needs for possession as others, because some people are going to be higher maintenance, requiring more individual attention, and others are going to be happy to rock and roll, bouncing in and out of bedrooms every night.
Yeah.
And just because they're more
okay. I guess I get it, because yeah, Phoebe wouldn't care if Monica and Chandler end up hugging at the end of the evening. Joey's gonna be satisfied, so he's fine.
Yeah.
Ross is just happy to be there, and Jennifer is probably, I'm sorry, what's her name in the show?
Monica?
Rachel. Rachel,
yes,
is probably just more in love with herself over anyone else, but, yeah, but lacks the attention. That actually is a pretty balanced relationship.
Yeah. So I think part of what we did wrong here was we abstracted it. And the moment we started looking at potential models of this thing,
yeah, yeah,
this thing became a lot more concrete and we could see, yes, it working in action.
Absolutely. So
now I do think that anyone listening is going to be like, that's fictional, it's not real, but you know what? You're not real to me.
It's a model,
listener,
right?
Because, yeah, I'm talking to another real person and you're, yeah, simply not here in the room. So that's, I don't, it, see why,
yeah,
Lisa Kudrow isn't more real.
If the listener had any real problems, they'd call in right now,
yes,
and we'd be able to talk to them. But clearly that hasn't happened.
No, okay. Yeah. See, yeah, that proves it.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think Friends is actually a legitimate model. I'm slowly swinging around to the idea that, yeah, okay, maybe six people could be in a polyamorous intimate relationship with each other, so long as we have a balance of personality types and levels of intimacy.
Yeah, because you know what? I think that one of the things that we omitted, and you've implied a number of times, is that all the people have the same exact level of needs when it comes to emotions and connection and stuff. And that might be true with the people, but there also might be people who are more free-spirited hippies who are happy to rock and roll and be a little bit more laissez-faire about it all.
Wow. Well, I don't know how I'm going to break this to Mel later on. But I think you've convinced me.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, when I started this and I was talking to Jasmine, I was like, hey, I might end up destroying Liam's marriage by the end of the day. And she was like, well, you're our philosopher after all.
Yeah. Look, and if we can't hold to the arguments that we've been swayed by, I don't know what we're doing here. So, you know, watch this space in the future.
Yeah, okay. There might be space for you, listener, if you were, yeah, real.
Yeah, if you're into, you know, sharing a bed with two other people and dogs, then you might be for us.
All right. Well, thank you for the conversation, and I'll see you next time when we bring you on board to communism.
Oh, Fantastic.
Maybe.
Polyamorous communist. Mm. I can't wait. All right. See you next time.
Sees that means a production. All right.